This is Free Speech Radio News for Tuesday, January 29th. I'm Larry Bensky. In the news today, controversy continues over the Bush administration's ties to the bankrupt Enron Corporation. Not everyone in Washington thinks the Bush administration deserves its 83% approval rating on the eve of tonight's State of the Union speech, and the European Union threatens Zimbabwe with sanctions if it fails to meet a series of demands aimed at ensuring fair elections. We'll have those and other stories right after these news headlines.
I'm Randy Zimmerman with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. A congressional task force will investigate reports that workers are having adverse physical reactions to mail irradiated to kill anthrax. Kata Mester has more from the Capitol.
Congressional aides from half a dozen offices complained of health problems after handling the decontaminated mail. Staffers complained of a burning sensation on their hands when they opened mail, as well as eye, nose, and throat irritation. Other staffers complained they suffered headaches coupled with a metallic taste in their mouths. Since last October, after the letter containing anthrax was sent to Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle's office, all congressional mail is irradiated at Postal Service facilities in Ohio and New Jersey. The Postal Service issued a statement insisting there is no clinical evidence linking irradiation to health problems. For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, I'm Kata Mester.
The American Civil Liberties Union has moved to force open hearings in immigration courts. Correspondent Rita Sand has the story.
Earlier today, the ACLU filed suit on behalf of U.S. Congressman John Conyers, the Detroit News, and the Metro Times in an effort to reverse a new mandate by Chief U.S. Immigration Judge Michael Crepy that closes all immigration hearings. Before the mandate, it was up to individual judges as to whether or not the proceedings involved national security issues and needed to be closed to the public. Although immigration courts hear cases involving non-citizens, ACLU spokesperson Wendy Wagenheim says federal regulations mandate that all courts be open.
In this case, we're talking about a system of justice, and we don't have two systems of justice in this country. Unless there's some reason that these clear hearings need to be closed because of a national security, they should be open and people should be able to see what's going on.
The ACLU hopes to open future hearings and obtain transcripts of the three hearings that have already taken place in Detroit. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Rita Sand in Chicago.
Approximately 50 students held a demonstration outside the U.S. Embassy in Manila today to protest the coming joint U.S.-Philippine military action. More than 600 U.S. soldiers are scheduled to be in the Philippines on Thursday to help train their counterparts to destroy a so-called Islamic extremist group on a southern island. According to an independent poll, which did not indicate sample size or their margin of error, most Filipinos want the military assistance. One student at the protest called the U.S. action imperialistic. More than 60 Israeli Army reservists, half of whom are officers, released a petition today that says they won't serve in the West Bank or Gaza Strip because they say they're ordered to abuse Palestinians. Free Speech Radio News correspondent Peretz Gadron is also an organizer for an organization which supports these soldiers.
This is the basic problem. The army is doing something that it isn't capable of doing, as the American army wasn't capable of winning hearts and minds in Vietnam. There's no way that the army can do this. So the result is either misbehavior, war crimes, illegal conduct by army units or by individual soldiers, or soldiers rebelling and saying, hell, I'm here to defend the country and not to make life a misery for the Palestinian population. This group has gone public, made a very heavy impact in the Israeli public. The media are full of it, and there's constant debate. So it's broken this kind of regime of silence that the army tried to impose, and it's brought the whole issue out into the open, and now the army has to change tactics.
That was Free Speech Radio News correspondent Peretz Gadron in Jerusalem. And finally, over 200 protesters convened at San Quentin Prison in California last night during the state execution of convicted murderer and award-winning poet Stephen Wayne Anderson. Kelly Denson filed this report from inside the death chamber.
It was all business at San Quentin Prison this morning, as Stephen Wayne Anderson became the 10th person to be executed in California since the death penalty was reinstated in 1992. Anderson, who had been on death row for 2 decades for murdering 81-year-old Elizabeth Lyman in Southern California, was pronounced dead at 12:30 this morning. Vernell Crittenden is the information officer for San Quentin Prison, who compared Anderson to an inmate who was executed last year at the prison.
When you begin to look at such people as Robert Massey and Steven Anderson, these are inmates that have lived on death row and have decided that, you know, I'm just tired of living the life of a condemned inmate and are now ready to accept the ultimate punishment.
Lawyers for Anderson had been fighting to get a stay of execution, claiming Anderson did not get a fair trial due to the incompetence of his trial attorney. For those trying to glean some insight into the mind of Steven Anderson, perhaps it can be found in some of his award-winning poetry, poetry he wrote while serving time on death row. Reporting from San Quentin Prison, I'm Kelly Denson.
And I'm Randy Zimmerman for Free Speech Radio News.
Bush administration officials say the president won't touch the Enron issue in his first State of the Union speech tonight. Instead, he'll make a plea for corporate responsibility and talk about the threat from what his administration says are 100,000 trained terrorists throughout the world. But questions remain regarding the White House's relationship with the bankrupt energy trading company Enron, and the U.S. General Accounting Office is threatening to sue the administration tomorrow to force the release of documents concerning meetings the administration held with energy market players. Joshua Chafin reports from Washington.
A Senate hearing this morning on the impact of the Enron bankruptcy on energy prices quickly became a venue for general concern about the way the company may have manipulated energy markets and even the political process to its own advantage. Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington pressed Pat Wood, Bush's pick to head up the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, to disclose any documents he has concerning the FERC's relationship with the White House and with Enron.
You do have communications with the administration, I'm sure, on their energy policies. And you do have some communications, or I would assume, communication with, obviously, these various entities like Enron. Would FERC make those documents available?
I can tell you Enron hasn't been in to see me or my staff at all since I've been here. And that's a pretty short list, but I'll be glad to give you what we have.
But your communication.
Before being chosen to head up the FERC, Wood was chair of the Texas Public Utilities Commission. Before that, Wood was in charge of the Indonesian arm of the ARCO company. Even at the risk of a General Accounting Office lawsuit, the Bush administration refuses to release the names of energy market players who consulted for the White House last year while the president was forming his energy policy. The administration argues that to do so would compromise the president's ability to form such task forces and to ensure that private sector consultants could keep their anonymity. White House spokesman Ari Fleischer maintains the investigation into the links between the administration and the Enron Corporation has not been able to uncover any wrongdoing. Reporters asked if the administration is worried about the perception that the White House has something to hide.
Well, you know, I really just have to say that for all these reports of drip, 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 everything seems to keep coming up dry, dry, dry. And the president and the vice president understand that some of the biggest mistakes people make in Washington is they put politics and perception before principle and policy. And that's how they govern. And this president and this vice president are proud to put principle before politics and perception, because they believe that if you do the right thing on principle, politics and perception have a way of taking care of themselves.
In spite of all the questions about Enron's conduct and some West Coast senators' concern that the heavy hitters in the energy markets have been gouging energy consumers, FERC Chairman Pat Wood urged the senators not to reintroduce federal rules into the energy market to stay the course toward deregulation.
I think steady as she goes on opening up the power markets, Congress has been, in my mind, supportive of the Commission's efforts to do that thoughtfully and do that assertively to get the power markets to the health and depth and liquidity that the gas markets
are. You've all talked about transparency.
But consumer advocate Mindy Spatt with the Utility Reform Network in San Francisco says it's too easy for FERC Chairman Wood to keep arguing for deregulation because as a resident of Washington, D.C., he hasn't seen his power bills jump in recent years like they have in California.
From our perspective, it would be foolish for other states to go along with deregulation because it's been a disaster here. The push for deregulation in California and in the entire country comes from industry people who believe that they can gain financial benefit from it. No consumer groups have pushed for deregulation because it's not good for consumers. I would say that the FERC, whether accidentally or on purpose, is doing the bidding of the corporations in this case.
The currently bankrupt Enron Corporation is selling off its assets to other energy companies like Dynergy and Reliant, which along with Enron tripled and quadrupled prices on California consumers last summer. Reliant alone has given the Republican Party $200,000 in the last year. During that same period, Reliant gave more than $100,000 to the Democrats. Joshua Chaffin, Free Speech Radio News, Capitol Hill.
As the president prepares to deliver his State of the Union speech tonight, his political supporters point to an 83% overall approval rating for the president in the latest polls. And polls also indicate a strong public preference for Republicans over Democrats, 50-43%, in this fall's upcoming congressional elections. But as Gareth Schweitzer reports from Washington, not everyone is on the same page about President Bush, especially not the Congressional Progressive Caucus.
15 members of the Congressional Progressive Caucus addressed the nation today with their alternative version of the State of the Union. In contrast to the corporate tax benefits pushed by the administration, the Progressive Caucus laid out a plan to help a broad cross-section of the American public. Congresspersons Barbara Lee, Barney Frank, and others spoke on issues such as Social Security and health care, which they believe the Bush White House has neglected. Dennis Kucinich, chairman of the caucus, stated that Americans should not go without an economic bill of rights, according all Americans' jobs, health care, and retirement benefits.
Americans believe in and deserve to be protected by an economic bill of rights. An economic bill of rights would acknowledge that all Americans, regardless of income, race, or creed, are entitled to certain rights that are needed by an individual to be truly free. These rights include the right to health care, the right to a clean environment, the right to a secure retirement.
Unlike the Bush administration, the Progressive Caucus wants to extend unemployment insurance to workers whose layoffs were not directly attributable to September 11th. Congressman Kucinich believes that economic issues should now be the government's top priority.
There is a great uncertainty in this land right now on matters economic, and I think that what our Progressive Caucus needs to do is to continue to make the case that economic issues have to be paramount as a matter of domestic security.
The Progressive Caucus is made up of Democrats and independents. Members share the goals of non-discrimination, economic justice, and funding for more social programs while spending less on defense. This was the fifth annual Alternative State of the Union Address. In Washington, D.C., I'm Gareth Schweitzer for Free Speech Radio News.
The European Union yesterday threatened Zimbabwe's government with sanctions if it fails to meet a series of demands aimed at ensuring fair elections in March. From Copenhagen, Patrick Beckett reports.
The European Union announced it will begin a campaign of targeted sanctions against the government of Zimbabwe if it fails to meet a list of demands within 1 week. The sanctions are to be aimed at specific members of the Mugabe government with the goal of preventing the development of a dictatorship in Zimbabwe. Chris Patten, European Commissioner for External Relations, explained the EU position at a press conference.
The ball is now very much in Mr. Mugabe's court. I hope that he'll respond constructively, but otherwise, as the Foreign Minister said, otherwise we will deem the Article 96 consultations to have come to an end and to take appropriate measures, appropriate measures which will be targeted on members of the regime, not on the people of Zimbabwe. They have suffered enough already. They've suffered because of the policies of the government over the last months and years.
Specifically, the sanctions will involve a travel ban on 20 top individuals, including Mr. Mugabe and his family, as well as the Information Minister, Jonathan Moyo. It will also implement a freeze on Mr. Mugabe's assets in Europe and ban the export from the EU of military equipment to Zimbabwe. President Mugabe's administration has passed a series of laws in recent months which ban foreign reporters, prevent criticism of his government, and discourage election campaigns by opposition parties. The government has also banned independent trade unions. In the past few weeks, there have been reports of increasing violence from Mr. Mugabe's militias against opposition party supporters. Elections are scheduled for early March. Mr. Mugabe has responded to the call for sanctions by saying he will accept the presence of foreign journalists and international election observers, although not from Britain. Britain has led the push for Europe to adopt the get-tough approach against the government of Zimbabwe. British Foreign Secretary Jack Straw has said he will push to have Zimbabwe expelled from the Commonwealth if democratic reforms are not met. Mr. Mugabe has held power in Zimbabwe for the past 20 years. From Copenhagen, for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Patrick Beckett.
Argentina's newest president, the fifth in 2 months, Eduardo Duhalde, says a trio of high-ranking cabinet members will travel to Washington on Tuesday to meet with Secretary of State Colin Powell. Duhalde is trying to mend fences with the White House and the International Monetary Fund. Meanwhile, protests opposing IMF policies continue on the streets of Buenos Aires. Duhalde faces daily protests from the unemployed demanding jobs and from middle-class Argentines angry over a bank deposit freeze. In the latest demonstrations, unemployed groups blocked several highways near Buenos Aires, and the northern city of Resistencia was virtually cut off by roadblocks. Reporters Luz Ruiz and Tim Russo filed this report from Buenos Aires.
This week, Argentina found itself at yet another crossroads and historic moment in what has been its most turbulent period in more than a decade, where five presidents in a mere month have passed through the doors of the Pink House on the famed Plaza de Mayo. On Friday night, Eduardo Duhalde, vice president under Carlos Menem and now the current president, was challenged by those that hold his fate in their hands, the Argentine people. Tens of thousands of Argentinians mobilized on Friday in what has become dubbed the Cacerolazo, the saucepan movement, characterized by people taking to the streets, banging ladles, pots, and pans. Friday's massive Cacerolazo estimated more than 100,000 people mobilizing nationally in Rosario, Santa Fe, Buenos Aires, and most of Argentina's major cities was the largest since President de la Rúa resigned the presidency on December 20th last year. Ruben Dria, professor of sociology at the University of Buenos Aires, describes Friday's Cacerolazo as a result of Duhalde's adherence to the previous economic policy that created the Corralito, a term that is used to describe an invisible crib built by the country's banks to limit the flight of capital. The net result restricts the average Argentine from withdrawing in excess of $1,000 a month in pesos from their personal savings, while devaluation means that these accounts are worth as little as 40% their true value just 1 month ago.
The process got worse in de la Rúa's government when he once again took Cavallo as economic minister, which was the greatest privatizer of Menem's terms. He began to make adjustments that became worse every time, provoking great suffering to the population until the moment came when practically all the savings of the middle class got frozen, producing what here is called el corralito. The corralito is a stop on dollar savings. This was a detonator that provoked the true explosion of the middle class.
Adding fuel to the fire and the indignation to misery was the International Monetary Fund's General Director Horst Köhler's declaration on January 23rd to the French daily Le Monde, where, referring to Argentina, he stated that the road to growth does not pass through populism, it is a painful road. A secondary theme to Friday's Cacerolazo was the absolute rejection to the neoliberal economic policies driven by the IMF expressed by demonstrators during the popular protests.
What the majority is asking for today are elections and to end the corralito, that the banks give back the money they robbed, because there is no other word, it's robbery what they have done. They should lose right now. It shouldn't be like the IMF says that the people must sacrifice and once again be the ones who pay. The ones who should pay are the politicians, the corporations, those who stole the money, and not the people who have been picking up the toll after Menem's party and the looting that continues on today.
Despite the massive rejection of the IMF policies, Claudio Loser, the IMF's director of the Western Hemisphere, arrived this morning to Buenos Aires to begin the preliminary negotiations for a $2.5 billion loan to Argentina. Nevertheless, Argentina has continued to organize itself in popular assemblies armed with saucepans and ladles, relentlessly pushing forward, as was the case Friday, despite a torrential downpour and a display of excessive police violence that culminated in tens of arrests, injuries, and clouds of tear gas throughout the Plaza de Mayo.
Unfortunately, demonstrations always end up with some sort of repression. It's very unfortunate that for someone who wants to demonstrate pacifically, it always ends up bad, but we're going to keep coming back. Today has been impressive because there was a moment where the rain was at its peak and the people did not leave. I believe that the people have once again showed that they are here to stay and will come back as many times as necessary to achieve the structural reforms that this nation needs.
This week's marches will drive the point home that Argentinians will stay in the streets until their voices are considered. As the organization continues locally in popular assemblies by Barrio, International Solidarity has called for a global cacerolazo on February 2nd and 3rd in a multitude of cities throughout the world, which will coincide with the World Economic Forum meetings in New York City, the counter meetings at the World Social Forum in Porto Alegre, Brazil, and Argentina's next massive cacerolazo next weekend. Reporting from Buenos Aires, this is Tim Russo.
And Luz Ruiz.
The USS John F. Kennedy battle group was scheduled to train in Vieques, Puerto Rico this week. The Navy had petitioned to use live fire on the controversial range on the island off of Puerto Rico. Instead, the now standard inert ordnance is being used off the coast of North Carolina and Florida. Today, Free Speech Radio News completes our three-part series about Vieques. Here's correspondent Shannon Novak with a report on Vieques after September 11th.
Except for the crickets and the indigenous Coqui frogs, it's probably pretty quiet tonight in Vieques. With the Navy practicing in the States, there isn't the hundreds of protesters from the main island, not even a press corps. About the only thing to do is go to a church service at the main protest camp, the Camp for Peace and Justice.
La unidad de este pueblo.
Or you can join the retired military personnel at El Sombrero Viejo Bar. There's free bingo during happy hour and usually some good t-shirts to read.
Beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy. Could be. That could be.
Although it's peaceful tonight in Vieques, protesters have what they call guarded optimism. Sources indicate that practice maneuvers could resume there in late April. The movement to remove the U.S. Navy from Vieques, which includes Puerto Rico's current government administration, has struggled to reposition itself since the events of September 11th. Puerto Rico's governor, Sila Calderon.
The September 11th events have changed the circumstances in which this issue is being seen and debated. For us now, solidarity with the U.S. and President Bush is foremost. The war against terrorism is foremost. And we have to see our goal and our objective within that reality in which we are living right now.
During the last maneuvers, there wasn't the usual protests out of respect for victims of the attacks. The island's government and protesters basically accepted the cancellation of a federally sponsored referendum. Residents were to vote on whether the Navy should stay or go. But the Commonwealth is still appealing a federal judge's decision to dismiss a lawsuit seeking to halt the Navy exercises. Again, with guarded optimism, people are counting on the words of President Bush and Navy Secretary Gordon England that the Navy will withdraw in 2003. And they're looking ahead to a massive cleanup. Dr. Juan Fernandez is the Vieques commissioner. He's appointed by Governor Calderon.
There are no less than 17 sites in which contamination has been detected. And of those, 13 are in the lands that were returned to the municipality of Vieques.
No indication of when the Navy is going to begin even planning how they're going to clean up the contaminated land.
No. I must be honest in this. And the Navy did start doing that.
They started cleaning it up?
Yeah, they did start. They have done some work, but not as fast as we would like. And that's what we are trying to accelerate.
It's a very expensive process. Have they agreed to pay for that too?
Yes, they have to pay for that. And of course, how expensive it is depends on the kind of contamination they have. Because there could be different things in different places.
Now, you're going to go clean that up? I've heard an estimation that's probably wild, but I've heard it take $200 million to clean that baby up. Now, as chairman of the Resource Committee, if it goes that way in 2003, why do we want to take that dangerous precedence? I think it would be much smarter to turn the whole thing into wilderness.
Navy Public Affairs Officer Lieutenant Jeff Gordon.
And I've got to tell you that the U.S. Navy is not alone in this type of struggle. The U.S. Army is having a terrible time in keeping their range open in Hawaii. We have the U.S. Air Force having a terrible time in exercising on their range in Arizona. There are a variety of groups, environmental groups and so-called peace groups and a variety of others who, for one reason or the other, want to close military bases.
An international delegation called the Caribbean Project for Peace umbrellas various communities from around the world that have the same types of problems as Vieques does from U.S. military practices: contamination, environmental destruction, economic hardships, declining health, and at times civilian death due to bombing accidents. They meet a few times a year to share ideas, learn from each other, and unite in their planning. Wanda Colon heads up the group.
Is the Caribbean Project for Justice and Peace, Proyecto Caribeño de Justicia y Paz.
Okay, and in English, what exactly does this organization do?
Oh, well, this is a pacifist organization that deals since 1972 from a peace education, with the sense of the peace education. Part of our effort on peace education is to demilitarize the minds and the hearts with people around the world in different communities. We're talking about the Philippines, we're talking about Panama, we're talking about Korea, and community in the U.S., Hawaii, of course, is a state, no? And California, that has more than 200 toxic sites. It's very important that is what we are talking about, demilitarization, is to demitify, you know, what's mean militarism, because militarism has a very high impact in our life. And in U.S., it's very important to say that there's a lot of community that has been dealing for a long, long time with the toxic contamination for the military practice and military presence. And the problem is that militarism is above the law.
And the rockets red glare, the bombs bursting in air.
I don't know, in Tokyo, they've got the problem, we've got the problem, but I think we've got the interest to correct the problem. Hopefully we can correct the problem. That's really the issue here, you know, correcting the health problem. And that's where really I think a lot of people are really looking now in terms of cleanup and you know, how can we get the health back? Can we measure health better? We haven't measured our health here. Vieques has always been on the back burner, the backwater. Now we're on the front burner.
And the home of the brave.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Shannon Novak.
Free Speech Radio News thanks radio station WOSO and Navy Public Affairs for their assistance and use of audio in the Vieques series. You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News, a production of 140 reporters, editors, and producers on strike against Pacifica Network News. With the recent change in the board of directors of Pacifica, we hope that our situation can be resolved soon. Meanwhile, we will continue to bring you Free Speech Radio News on this station. Our executive producer is Aaron Glantz. Our technical producer is Jade Paget-Seekins. I'm Larry Bensky.
I'm Tony Cross in Paris, just back from Afghanistan. I support Free Speech Radio News because we need media where the rich and rotten don't dictate the line. This broadcast only stays on the air with your financial support. Please donate to Free Speech Radio News online at www.fsrn.org. That's www.fsrn.org. Or call 510-287-5551. That's 510-287-5551. Thank you for your support.